This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Hail, cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Josh, and the cheaters have become one. Brandon, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. I'm feeling a little rusty. This is about our fourth time trying to start this episode of the podcast. So obviously, me taking a week off from the pod is not good for my banter.
I think last year we didn't take a lot of breaks last year. We took one around the Christmas. I think we were wiped out after all the Christmas fixtures, and we took a break in, you know, January during an international break or something. I mean, it was FA Cup break. And I remember when we came back, neither of us could even – it's like we didn't know what to talk about. Like, it took like 8 hours to record. We had no idea what we were doing. It doesn't take long to get pretty rusty.
It's funny, yeah. But I'm just back from a trip to Scotland, spent about a week there, and had a fantastic time. I can't say enough great things about Scotland itself and the very friendly people. I tell you, on Saturday, it was the first game weekend, I actually walked down Easter Road in and amongst all of the Hibernian fans as they were walking to their stadium on Easter Road.
And Hibs, right?
That's kind of Hibs, the yes. Yeah, and I think if I were to cheer for any Scottish team, I guess it would have to be Hibernian because they are one of the few, I'm sure our listeners can correct me if I'm wrong, one of the few Scottish clubs founded by Irish people, Irish immigrants to the country.
Oh, interesting. Cool. So you went to a bar when you were there too. What was that like? Was it, you know, because we go to a lot of bars in New York and you do have a lot of American fans who use, you know, British accents. And it's always kind of weird. A lot of, come on, you city. And it's like, come on, just talk like you're from Kentucky. Come on, stop it.
Yeah, I had trouble watching a lot of the games during the first game week, but I did have the great fortune of meeting up with two Always Cheating listeners, Colin and Graham. So, Colin and Graham, I'm sure you're listening on your commutes to work. Thank you so much for meeting me and recommending this great bar in Leith. It's called the Cask and Barrel. And how does it compare to an American bar, Josh? It was a lot more relaxed, I'll tell you that. So I showed up and I caught the tail end, like the last 10 minutes of Man United Bournemouth, and it was pretty well empty, maybe 15 people there, and that didn't really fill out the bar. But then Arsenal Liverpool, I guess probably because it's more of a marquee matchup, it really did fill up. And as the game went on, the atmosphere sort of grew and grew.
But it was a little more to skew Liverpool. I mean, obviously you're in the north. Did it feel more of a Liverpool bias than Arsenal?
Let me paint a picture for you, Josh. So in one corner, there were the younger hipsters who showed up with their girlfriends, and they were cheering for Arsenal. There was an older gentleman, you know, with his reading glasses at the tail end of his nose, and he was actually reading a newspaper while watching the game. It became clear at the midway point that he was a Liverpool fan.
Okay.
And that was kind of the vibe of the place, is everyone had their own agenda, but they were all sort of commingling and watching the game within their own sort of headspace, which I found cool. It was a really great vibe, and it was
nice. That sounds good. Yeah.
So yeah, it was harrowing for me trying to set my team for game week one. I was kind of planning on setting it on the airplane on the way to Edinburgh, but there was no Wi-Fi, so I didn't do as much tinkering as I would have wanted to going into game week one.
It was old school. You had to do it with pen and paper, Brandon, like a bowling, like old school bowling. You know, you had to fill in your scores, you know, and carry the 10 over for the strike and all that stuff.
I mailed it right into the FPL Central, and they plugged my team in for me. It was really nice, kind of them.
So you're back, though. Welcome back.
Thanks. Good to be back.
Game week two is in the books. And, you know, one thing I will say, there's been a lot of negativity around the Fantasy Premier League site, since the season started, with the rebooted website. And for some reason, a lot of people don't like their Twitter feed very much, which I actually don't mind. I think it's like not a half bad Twitter feed.
I don't really notice it, to be honest.
I have a theory about the Twitter feed, which is that every time they have some post, I see somebody start yelling at them about something. They're just yelling about the way they phrased it, or yelling they missed something, or whatever.
You have used Twitter before, right, Josh? This is what Twitter is used for, is to express your outrage.
I have, but I'm posting pretty actively on our Twitter feed during matches, and no one's yelling at me. Some people may occasionally take issue or be like, "Hey guys, love the pod, but you're wrong here." You know, there's sometimes it's like that, but people are just no. Cancel your, delete your account sort of thing. And everyone's freaking out.
Sort of the same thing they were saying to Andre Gray earlier this weekend when they discovered all of his marvelous tweets.
Yeah, exactly. So, there's the question there about Andre Gray. I mean, do you not want to have him on your team now? Because, his offensive tweet, it's a tricky one.
Well, you go back to Jamie Vardy last season, right, where he started the season on the back of all of these racist issues that he was having. And you just have to admit that a majority of these players are stunted adolescent men, and they're probably not cool people. But that's really not why we're watching sports.
No, that's true. If you had to like every athlete, it'd be very hard to watch sports at all.
Yeah.
If you didn't have to find some athletes pretty downright disgusting.
Sure. How do you think the sports. NFL is still a massive global property? Yeah,
seriously. So anyway, my theory is that everyone is too polite in general to yell at someone else on a person on Twitter, a fellow FPL enthusiast. But this site, it's kind of like free game.
Yeah.
It's a fair game, that is. So I think that people are they're frustrated at how their team is doing or whatever, and they see some kind of cheeky post from the official FPL site. And they're like, screw you guys. Yeah. Just launch into it. So anyway, all that said, the one thing I will say that I'm really excited about this year is they seem to have upgraded their servers, and they actually update scores and head-to-heads and all of this stuff within an hour or two, as far as I can tell.
Let's see. The game week shut down. We're recording this Sunday evening. It's been about 5 hours since the game week closed, and they've already updated all the leagues. It's really incredible compared to seasons past.
Oh, yeah. It used to take – and it actually helps the podcast too, because sometimes we wouldn't record because we wanted all the updated stuff on here. So, So big thumbs up in that. And I'll say thumbs up – not two thumbs up, but one thumb partially up for the Twitter feed. It's the thumb is just – it's just lifting up off of my fist.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even a full thumbs up.
And I'm still undecided on the Twitter feed, for the record.
Okay.
How'd you do this week, Josh?
Well, I didn't do great, I have to tell you. I mean, I finished on 62 points, which is – it's okay. Basically everything was downhill after Aguero scored his second goal. I had Luke Shaw. I had Ibrahimovic, and I had Aguero captain. So once that goes through, I'm looking at, 26, 39 – 50 points. So 50 points from three players, and I finished on 12 points from the remaining eight players. So pretty awful. John Stones, late, a very weird penalty. I thought Raheem Sterling, so much worse happens on almost every corner kick. I was amazed they called a penalty there.
Yeah. I'm fine with calling Ryan Shawcross out for something like that. But Raheem Sterling, he's so little. He's so tiny. He can't hurt anybody.
Yeah, exactly. I know in the NFL, there's a rule about, pass interference. If they weren't actually going to be able to catch the ball anyway, they don't call pass interference.
Right, yeah.
It's kind of Raheem Sterling was not stopping Shawcross from actually,
Well, it's the same as the offside rule as well. Like you, or the obstruction in terms right. of being in front of the goalkeeper. If you're in an offside position, so long as you're not in the play, you're fine.
Exactly.
I don't need to call it.
It was like, I mean, he did it just to prove a point, right? It was like, we're enforcing this rule now. Even things like this will be enforced. That's I'm not sure what it means. If they follow through, like, are you going to score goals or have penalties on like a third of all corner kicks? I mean, we could see like 10-9 games, right?
This is Mike Dean's reason for getting out of bed in the morning, though. He just gets up saying, I'm going to prove some points, and whether it's on the soccer pitch or whether it's probably in his kitchen telling his wife how to make toast.
Yeah, I lost my clean sheet with Stones, and then there was kind of a little yellow card thrown at the end for good measure, which is kind of annoying. And yeah. Jordi Amat, he was on for three bonus points, and then they conceded two late goals. That was kind of frustrating. Dele Alli didn't even come on until the 70th minute.
Yeah,
Ramirez came off in the 59th minute, so I got a 1 point there. Firmino didn't do anything, and Jamie Vardy was super frustrating. So it was just basically everything went wrong except for these three players. But because I got 62 total, I'm sort of it was like a treading water sort of week. I mean, I'm looking at all red arrows, but it wasn't like a huge disaster.
Yeah, you didn't lose a tremendous amount of ground.
Yeah, exactly. I'm still like in the 400,000th spot or whatever.
Yeah.
So, but I have two. I didn't actually make a transfer, so I've got two in the bank, and we can talk a little bit more about kind of the kind of moves that we're going to talk about midfielders in a little bit, so we can talk about it there.
Yeah.
Just some of our thinking. I know a lot of people are trying to figure out what to do in the midfield.
Yeah.
But I think Jamie Vardy is actually going to get a stay of execution, which just kind of personally annoys me because I really want him out of my team.
And I would too. I absolutely would.
I'm kind of feeling the effects of an imbalanced striker squad too. I thought it was worth it just for those first 2 weeks to have a lot of heavy hitters in there. And, Aguero and Ibra have obviously come off, but I'm really regretting obviously not bringing in Gray now. That's basically an 8-point loss there. It didn't matter this week, but
I wouldn't be too sure about that. And as a Gray owner, I remain a little concerned about him though he got a goal and assist and a bonus point, which is crazy. I still don't think he looked that great. He doesn't have a lot of pace on him, and I'm just a little concerned about his skill level.
Yeah, but I mean, if he's able to finish with just a couple, I mean, this is like Ibrahimovic, I mean, it's not like he's had a million chances, but just every time he has one, he does it. So
yeah.
So I guess what I'm saying is Andre Gray and Ibrahimovic are basically the same level of quality.
Sure.
So if you like one, you kind of have to like the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Ramirez thing, I know that stung you a little bit too. You actually, I mean, I'm like, whatever. It was kind of annoying. The thing that really annoyed me actually was that for the second week in a row, I left a 10-point goalkeeper on my bench.
Yeah. That'll sting. Yeah, that was like me and Robert Huth many, many points last season.
Yeah. God, you bring up the Huth thing every week. You'll never get over it, will you?
I won't. I really won't. Those two Man City goals, I'll curse them on my grave.
This week I had Heaton on my bench and I lost 10 points. I mean, I never gave any thought to it either. I mean, I really felt very good starting Ben Foster at home and benching Heaton, against Liverpool.
You made the right call.
I would think so. Yeah, yeah, I certainly was advocating for it on last week's podcast, and I think it's, but whatever. So it's frustrating. Then last week I started Heaton and had Foster on the bench, and he picked up 10 points. So
yeah,
we'll see who I can leave on the bench this week. It'd be kind of cool actually if I went all 38 weeks finding a way to keep 10 points in the goalkeeper spot.
Yeah,
it would almost be worth like not getting as many points just for the sheer like amount
novelty of it.
Exactly.
Right. Well, my game week started off with a bang in that the United Southampton game was happening while I was traveling back from Scotland, and I had no Wi-Fi, no way to follow this game. So as we were taxiing to the gate at JFK Airport, I pull up my phone and I see that Ibra's got two goals, and I captained him this week. And Luke Shaw is on 11 points, and also I have De Gea in goal. So I pull up my team and I have 43 points after just one game, which was incredible. Yeah. My wife, who was sitting next to me on the plane, I immediately shoved the phone in her face and I say, look at this. This is a great thing. She really wanted nothing to do with me at that point.
Well, after that many hours on a plane, too.
Yeah,
it's pins and needles. Yeah. So how many points did you finish on total this week?
I ended up with 84 points, and that's with Gray and Aguero up front as well. I mean, it was kind
What's
of
your game week rank? That's got to put you right in the top couple hundred thousand.
So my game week rank was 50,136.
Not bad.
So it's up there. 118 was the highest point total. So I'm in the conversation, Josh.
That puts you about 70,000th overall, I think you were saying.
Yeah, let's offline. See. So now I'm 76,725. I mean, I did make a
great start.
I made a few goofs, though. I wanted to get on board the Ashley Williams train for some reason, and I got too clever. I dropped Wes Morgan, and I brought in Williams for 1 point as opposed to the 6 points from Morgan. And then Lester is going in, walking into a very tantalizing Swansea fixture next game week. So I'm really regretting that.
I was shocked when I saw you bring him in. I mean, first of all, I thought there was a pretty good chance he wouldn't play. And I say this as someone who, I mean, you certainly outplayed me this week. But yeah, the second I said that, because I was like, well, I think in the press conference, it was like, well, he might feature a little bit in this match or something like that. So
yeah.
I guess you can just chalk it up to being in the UK and not getting those Ben Dinnery, you know, Twitter updates.
I have been a little bit out of the loop. I'll be honest about that. My defense is a little bit of a shambles now. So I've got Kone. I've got the bad Kone on my bench. Mm-hmm. And if he ends up going to Everton, which I'm not sure how much sense that makes, then I'll be doubled up on Everton defense. That's no good. And then I've got Valdez and George Friend doubled up on Borough defense. So I have a few things to sort out in my defense still. But yeah, on the whole, I'm thrilled with how I ended up in game week two.
So who else came through for you?
Kyle Walker.
I'm already bored, but go on, Brandon.
Kyle Walker, 2 game weeks in a row, 6 points, then 7 points this game week. I did bench Kyle Walker in game week one for some unknown reason, but I'm really happy with how he's looking. Hazard in my midfield, a ridiculous yellow card to end the match, booting the ball
the ball away, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone with Hazard in their team is just screaming the C word as loud as they could at the TV screen when he did that. But you have to feel good about how
Chelsea, right?
Yes, Chelsea Handler, the famous curse of Chelsea Handler. So, but you have to feel good about Hazard is looking. He's integral to that Chelsea offense now, and that's an assist or a goal in the last two games. He's in good form. Gray, as I said, came through for me. That's a huge output by my three strikers. All told, that's 5 goals and 1 assist and 7 bonus points.
Not bad. So I have this week's humble brag of the week, which comes from Aiden Green. He says, and I know it's not necessarily a humble brag, but after a tough week, it was kind of hard to read. He says, finding it stressful my first time in the top 20K, 73 points, and it looks like it'll be a red arrow. Wow.
It's hard up there at the top, man.
Heavy lies the crown, doesn't it, Aiden? Yeah. No, congratulations, Aiden. I'm sure all.
It's true. I mean, to come to Aiden's defense, though, the game does get even more stressful the more successful. Like the more
I agree.
The things that are at stake, the higher you get, the more you tend to sweat every single decision.
Yep.
Because the mistakes just have so much bigger consequences in terms of your overall rank. So yeah, I feel you, Aiden.
Well, the problem is this early in the season, it feels like everything is, you know, it's, I by game week 30, you know, I remember the season with my best ever finish. I think I finished 15-30 overall. And but the problem is you could only move up so high or so low by game week 36, 37, because everybody had the same team.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Maybe I had one or two players that were different than, but by the time you're that far along, the template is pretty set, you know,
right.
And you know, maybe you have a different captain or you have a, you know, a different Man City defender or something like that. But, you know, but this early in the season, it's like, it feels like players are coming at you from all sides. Like there's no way to know who's going to be the next Etienne Capoue.
Exactly. Considering this was the weekend of the defensive holding midfielder, where Victor Wanyama, Capoue, and Gareth Barry are all putting up points, I'd say if you're behind in your league by 20 points, those are 20 points you're easily going to make up.
You can make up in game week three. Yeah, exactly. It's nothing to worry about. All right, Brandon, let's get right into the heart of this episode. I want to talk a little bit about the Hail Shooter Super League, and then we have a few key topics that we're going to get into. One is Everton Corner. We have about 9 different questions about Everton. We'll try to compress those into a couple.
No
solid
FPL season would be complete without a lot of Everton mystery for a few solid game weeks.
That's very true. We're going to talk about Ibra and Aguero. We have our little midfielder roundtable. We have our third striker symposium, and then that's probably it. I think we'll be too tired. We're just gonna. Sign out, Brandon. I think this podcast will just fade away. You just bring the sound down after about 2 hours.
Yeah, I have a great white paper as well that I'm going to present at when the third striker symposium section comes up, and I will I'll post that white paper up on our website.
And that's been peer reviewed, right?
Always peer reviewed. Yeah, nothing Excellent. Makes it on to this podcast without peer review.
So just a quick side note, KG at Kuda Goffrey said, "What game week will you guys use your wild cards?" I'm happy to say that I'm going into game week 3. I have my 2 transfers. I'm not planning to use it right now. Hopefully I think I'm set up well enough to go through at least game weeks 4, 5, and 6 maybe without using a wild card too. I mean, I think by game week 6, I'll probably end up using my wild card. I think that given the season with the new managers, with all these questions, players like Nolito, are they going to start? Aren't they? I do think it makes sense to wild card relatively early this year. So, my guess right now would be something like game week 6 or 7. I think there's an international break, after 6 or 7 weeks. Yeah. So that's probably when I'll do it.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm shooting for as well. I think we're in a good position, both having Ibra and Aguero. And I think if you're without both of those guys, based on their form right now, I would definitely consider wildcarding going into game week 3 just to get them into my squad. But beyond that, yeah, I'm hoping to hang on to it as long as possible.
Yep, agreed. I mean, there's no reason to use it if you can avoid it. You know, especially if you can bank 2 transfers. And having 2 transfers almost feels like a wild card because you can really shake up your team with a couple of moves.
And if you don't really need to use it, there very likely will be a game week coming up that you don't see coming where there's going to be a couple of injuries or suspensions in your team.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. This happens every year. You know, I mean, you play your wild card and then 4 weeks later, half your team gets injured. And you're like, why did I play my wild card when I didn't absolutely need to? It was like avoid the rage wild card. This is one of our 10 tips for success. Don't rage wild card if you can avoid it. It's just not worth it. And you'll really end up regretting it, a few weeks later.
For sure.
The first time Sergio Aguero goes down with a knee injury, which is probably going to happen any game week now. Yeah. That's when you want to play your wild card.
Yeah. So unless your whole squad just really stinks and you need to get that Ibra Aguero combination going, just be patient. Don't jump on your wild card just yet.
I agree. All right. Hail Cheater Super League. Brennan, you want to run down the top 10?
Yeah, absolutely. My first time running through this season's Super League, so this is exciting. Number 1, Oscar winner. That's Pat Dudzinski's team. I do love that name, Dudzinski. He sounds like a really cool guy. So huge score this game week, 91 points, bringing him to a grand total of 164. In second place, it's Gloria Prieto with Spleeb Splorb. 89 points this week, another massive game week, 163 total points.
Go, third, Gloria.
Yeah, I assume Gloria is a female. It's good to see some women.
I guess it could be like an Italian man's name, right?
Sure. Or somebody who's just way into Latin, like sick transit Gloria.
Gloria, if you're out there and you're on Twitter, send us a little note and tell us how you're feeling about your season so far.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. Third place, Macaulay Maybe. That's Vincent P's team. Great score of 80 on the game week. I Am Apple, that's William Sutton's team, in fourth place, 77 points. There's a 3-way tie here for fourth, Josh. So also coming in fourth, Wijnaldum Leviosa. I recall you and Trevor last week talking about the Harry Potter derivation of that name, which I also give it a thumbs up. So that's Taylor Andrews' team, also 77 points this game week. The Hat Wobblers, Dutch Powers, also in fourth place, 75 points this week.
I hope Dutch Powers is their real name, too. That's a great name.
Yeah.
It sounds like, I mean, it sounds like a history book, doesn't it? It sounds like a book about naval warfare in the 18th century.
It's the sequel to The Brilliant Orange, the great soccer book about the history of the Dutch total football.
It's a history of PSV, Dutch Powers.
And then we have a two-way place here in the Super League for seventh place, Lemon Party. That's Lars Johansson's team, 76 points on the game week. Also tied for seventh, it's Lads on Torre. That's Nick Forster's team, 72 points, one of the lower point totals here in the Super League top 10.
Getting hairy there, Nick.
Yeah, well, watch yourself. Maybe you out a wild card this week, Nick. And coming in ninth place, Celtic Crows. That's Zach Zothra's team, 76 points this game week. And also with 72 points in 10th position, it's PK Blinders FC, probably my biggest favorite team name here in the top 10 right now. That's Philip Green's team. And that rounds out your top 10 in the Hail Cheater Super League. Well done, everybody.
Yeah, congrats, everybody. And we'll get more into – we'll start digging around the Super League as we go. I feel like we got a little too much to get to this week.
Yeah, right. You know, I want to do a search for some of my other favorite team names as well.
Yeah.
See if we have any clever managers there, at least in the top 100. We have
close to
900 managers at this point now competing in the Super League. So sifting through all of these team names takes a little bit of time.
Yeah, it made me feel better about being like 470th or so. It's like, well, that's like I'm in the middle somewhere.
Yeah, right.
All right, Brennan, you ready for some key topics?
I'm ready. Bring them on.
So the first one is what I'm calling Everton Corner, because we got so many questions about Everton this game week. I think we'll eventually get to all of these questions. I'm going to go kind of a couple at a time so it's not so tedious here. But
sure.
Colin Bothwell, your friend from Scotland, says –
good friend, Colin. Hey, Colin.
How many Everton is too many? Great run of fixtures and finally a manager who has clue what he is doing. Time to return to our favorite troll Kaku. And then El Magico says, which Everton players did you pick ahead of their strong run of games? And then let's just do one more. Let's do three. Okay, we have nine different Everton questions. Mark Dinka, FFM Mark on Twitter says, who would be a good recruit from Everton, Morales or Bolasie? Both great options, but could see limited minutes. So, Brandon, Everton, you have one Everton player, probably already regretting it.
Hey, I've got one solid point. That brought me up to a very prestigious 84 points. Without Ashley Williams, I would have been sitting 83 right now. Actually, I'd be sitting 85 with George Friend coming in.
So, or 89 if you just kept
Wes Morgan. All right, now that we've gone through all the permutations of what my defense could have looked like. I am all things considered happy that I brought Ashley Williams in because, yeah, they're Koeman has this long-standing history of solid defenses with Southampton. You could see a lot of clean sheets coming to Everton with this great run.
I'm not sold. I'm not convinced that I'm willing to argue. I think there are some very interesting options in the midfield, and obviously you have Lukaku as a constant, especially now that he's getting back to where he wants to be health wise. But I think the defense is the place I would actually be avoiding right now. I just don't really trust that banged up D, and Jagielka is past his prime, and Seamus Coleman's not there right now, and right. Funes Mori kind of stinks. I'm a little worried about the defense.
It's fair enough. I predict that there will be a handful of clean sheets coming to them, and I do. I've only watched like the highlights of their game, so I'm not totally studied on Everton's form, and I do agree they don't look like world beaters right now. But I think for me, it's defense and midfield. I think Troll Kaku is still trolling around. I am not ready to commit. Speaking directly,
I mean, you wouldn't want him until game week three anyway. Just given that, well, you know, we there was a pretty good chance he wasn't going to play game week one, and then game week two. Sort of what happened. What happened is what was predicted, right? That he's going to come on maybe half. He actually came out at kind of a strange time, right? Didn't he come out at like the 40th minute or something?
Yeah, there was an injury to McCarthy. McCarthy had to come off, and then Koeman found that was the opportunity to bring Trollcock in.
That's a like for like sub right there. A defensive midfielder swapping with Romelu Lukaku.
Yeah, the only point at which I saw Lukaku in the highlights of that game was when Morales was scoring his goal and Lukaku was on the other side of the goal frame, you know, seeing all of his highlights pass before his eyes.
Okay, so I have – so there's kind of a whole midfield situation here. They're all pretty affordable. They're all worth thinking about to some degree. Ayo Nubumbu said, you know, I guess the big kind of elephant in the room is Gerard Deulofeu. Well, this one of the elephants. It's a big room, Brandon. There are a lot of elephants.
Yeah, I think
one of
those elephants. Barkley's probably the bigger elephant to me.
He's like a white elephant, though. It's like a, it's a white elephant sale with Rosberg. I don't even know what it, what is that. What is a white elephant?
Sale? That's how you would exchange gifts at like an office Christmas party. It's right. It's like you give a gift and somebody can either pass it or keep it, and then you swap it. And,
right. Right. Yeah.
So
Isle of Nabobo said
that makes me like that likes me that makes me like Gerard De La Feo a little bit more.
He says, "Is it time to get rid of De La Feo? Fixers are good though." Anders said, replacement for De La Feo. Do I look at Bolasie? A lot of questions about De La Feo. Tom Butcher also had a question about De La Feo. So what do you think about Jerry D? Are you
the radar?
No,
the enticing thing about Jerry D was what position would he be playing? He was playing through the middle during preseason, and there were times in which he could have been positioned as a striker, but that was all contingent on Lukaku being out of the lineup. And now that it looks like Lukaku is back, I am not interested in Jerry D in the slightest bit. Who I would be interested, though, would be Kevin Morales.
Let's talk about De La Feo for another minute or two here, though, because I think that
do we have to
the concern here if for people who are either own De La Feo and they're thinking about getting rid of him, even if it's a like for like sub, or they're thinking about bringing him in.
Yeah.
God forbid. it's that he played 67 minutes in the first match and he played 60 minutes in the second match. It looks like his minutes are going to be managed exactly as they were under. Our well-dressed friend
Roberto Martinez.
So, given that that's the case, you're only getting 60 minutes out of this guy basically every fixture. He's more of a Jesus Navas type, really. I mean, yeah. I was surprised that they even brought him in as a they kind of played as a forward, because I don't think of him as a particular. I mean, okay, if you want to be a little more generous, more of a Raheem Sterling, maybe he does occasionally get into the box, but he's not a great finisher. He's not really looking to finish most of the time. He does link up pretty well with Lukaku when he plays, but you could say the same thing about Ross Barkley when he's in form. So, yes. I don't think it's worth it. I think that of the midfield, he's the fourth most interesting option.
Yeah. I would agree with you there. I think then it goes De La Feo. We can talk about all these guys, but for me it goes De La Feo at the bottom, then Bolasie, then Morales. Well, Barkley, I'm still not even sure how I feel about, but I agree. Jerry D, lowest on my priority list.
See, I actually think I might put Bolasie at the top of my list.
Okay. Well, I mean, he is among the most affordable. He's at 6.0, isn't that right?
He's $6 million, so you frees up a lot of cash.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, the question is whether he's going to be starting from here on out. I think he probably is. I don't think you'd make a big expensive move for him and then he's coming off the bench any more than just that first week.
The obvious Southampton comparison to make would be to Sadio Mane. And Mane... Right. Is virtually a guaranteed starter at Southampton, but there were two or three or four games last season where Mane didn't make it into the starting lineup when he was healthy. So I would guess there might be a few games where Bolasie isn't in contention.
Can I get personal here for a minute, Brandon?
Yeah, let's get.
Do you mind if I get personal with you?
Yeah, get up real close.
So I'm really seriously considering dropping both. I have two transfers this week. I'm considering dropping both Alli and Firmino.
Right.
Dele Alli, big concern there. Not only did he come off the bench, but he didn't look very good in the Everton match anyway. So,
right.
I thought he actually looked pretty good in the 20 minutes he played, but I'm not going to pay $8.5 million for a player who might come in for 20 minutes over the next couple of weeks.
Yep.
And, I mean, he really should have had an assist because Jansen missed an absolutely beautiful opportunity. It was a truly terrible miss. Up there were some of Vardy's misses over the other first 2 weeks of the season.
If I were just a side note, I'd be interested if Pochettino would consider swapping Eriksen for Alli in the next couple of matches. So if he continues to play Jansen up front, Eriksen looked really out of sync.
I know. It's like Eriksen is like Dusan Tadic, where you just sometimes wonder if they're just forever destined to be the statisticians' players.
Yeah.
Like Dusan Tadic, once again, second year in a row, third year in a row, really. This guy, Dusan Tadic had one great game week in game week 8 of the 2014-2015 FPL season.
Yeah, and he was one of the most legendary game weeks of all time.
Exactly. He had a couple of nice moments in the second half of last season, but everyone is always tempted to bring him in because he looks so great and all of the shots in the box and chances created. I mean, there's like if he, you know, it's kind of like Eden Hazard, where if they score or assist, they tend to get bonus points because they're so integral to the gameplay. But much like Eriksen, it just seems like it doesn't happen to the degree that it should. And it seems to happen year over year. Now, granted, we're only 2 weeks into the season and you know, Tadic, not to get too down a rabbit hole here, but, you know, Tadic was away to Man U. And I suppose you could argue that it's a slightly difficult match for Eriksen at home to Crystal Palace. I don't know.
You can't argue that.
Yeah.
You can't argue that.
But they've been disappointing. So anyway,
we're talking about Ali and Firmino right now.
Yeah, exactly. So Ali's gone. Firmino, I'm planning to drop too, and I'm planning on bringing in Eden Hazard for one of my transfers. And the other player that I'm looking to bring in is some midfielder from Everton, and I just can't decide which one I want to bring in right now.
Yeah,
I'm not as convinced on Barkley as some people are. I mean, the free kick goal that he scored in game week one was a complete fluke. I don't know if you've seen the replays of it, Brandon, but
I have.
It was a free kick that missed everybody and bounced at such an angle that the keeper couldn't be saved.
Yeah, he was just stuck.
Exactly. So,
and then Barkley proceeds to celebrate as if he won the World Cup.
Right. And then he picked up an assist in game week two. Now, that to me doesn't mean that he's not worthy of being picked up, but it's not, given that I owned him for like 12 two-pointers in the second half of last season.
Yeah.
I know what he's capable of playing like when he's not focused.
Sure. Buyer beware, this is still the same Ross Barkley. It's not a new Ross Barkley, like a different player that just happens to have the same name, but he is the same Ross Barkley that you have dropped from every team for the last three seasons.
And the other, I mean, really that whole line of midfielders is just full of players like this, right? I mean, Kevin Morales is like this too. I mean, a totally streaky player. He's almost never had a extended run of excellent form at Everton. You know, I think he's in his fourth season there.
Yeah.
And Yannick Bolasie, when he was at Crystal Palace, was totally mercurial. I mean, kind of Sadio Mane like you said. You know, looked like a world beater, and then he would kind of disappear for a few weeks. Now he's had some health. So Bolasie is the one that I'm leaning towards the most, just because I just think he's an interesting element in that squad, and I think that I think he'll be looking to really get involved in the action the next few game weeks. And so I'm leaning towards him. I think the more conservative play would be Barkley. And I think that Morales is – I don't really know what to think about Morales.
Morales I like in terms of – it's sort of the reason I like Lamella this season. I feel like he's coming into an improved situation, or slightly different with Lamella in that he's coming off of some decent end of season form. But Morales obviously had problems getting along with Martinez last season, but now he has a new manager, and if he's getting a regular starting role, he's always had the potential to be great and to be a real goal scorer and take dead balls. I mean, I know he's famously missed penalties for Everton in the past, but he's also scored on free kicks. If Barkley's not taking them, it might be likely that Morales is taking them. It looks like Baines has no interest in dead balls anymore. But
poor Leighton Baines. Is it just that he's more into concerts now? He's really into shows.
He's so disrespected that the FPL has even dropped him below 6 million in price.
He's just gonna start playing matches like with like an iPad or like an iPod and like just like the big oversized cans.
Oh, you know that Leighton Baines rocks the iPad Pro, the like giant tabloid size iPad.
He could like stick it under the back of his shirt, maybe. I mean, they're a little looser there. It's not like the Arsenal shirts. I think you could hide an iPad back there.
Yeah, I like Morales. He's at 6.52. That's a competitive price. Barkley, he's already up to 7.6. He's hard to shoehorn into your midfield at that price tag now, particularly if you're looking to bring in a guy like Hazard.
So, if you had gun to your head and money not being an option, and you could bring in any player from this team, and I'll even loop in, let's just say any player, defender, midfielder, forward, who would you bring in?
I'll stick to my guns and say Kevin Morales at 6.5, and just watches watch his starts. And if like Ali, he loses a start, then yeah, I guess not that I'm wrong on that one. But if he continues to start, I think he'll probably at least match Ross Barkley's output.
I would like to say with some confidence that there's an ideal answer here. I mean, I guess the appeal of Barkley is that he does play every match, and he tends to play the full match when he's in. So I think that's probably the safest pick. I might even end up going with Barkley in the end, because I just know that I'll be getting 90 minutes from him. And he'll be – we're in one of the stretches where Ross Barkley cares about scoring. So when he's in one of these runs of form, he's a pretty tempting player.
Sure.
So we'll see. But I think that the
– One last thing about Morales that's important to note, a great feature for a fantasy asset. He's a ball hog.
Yes, Paul. That's true. That can bring his bonus points down though sometimes too, because he'll lose shots off target
and he'll lose possession. It's true.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess I would go Barkley. Bolasie is kind of the differential option, and then Morales, and then Delafeu.
So
but
Delafeu like
at the bottom.
Neither of us are even considering Lukaku at this point.
Not really. My next one is one of those 6.5 forwards that everyone's talking about. Yeah, I've been reading about them. They sound
like the latest,
like
greatest things. Yeah. Everyone has to have one.
So I'm planning to, so I think in my transfer before game week four, I'm going to be dropping Jamie Vardy for one of these guys. We'll see who steps up in game week three. Alvaro Negredo, who I've been trashing nonstop on the podcast since like the first preseason pod. Or possibly Andre Gray, the homophobic Twitter man.
So is this an opportunity for us to pivot out of Everton Corner and into the next section of the pod?
Let's do it, but let's take a little break first. Same old podcast,
always cheating. Okay, we're back, and we're going to try and pivot here out of Everton Corner, and I think a good way to do that is to read this comment from Zikri on Twitter, at TFS Zikri. Says, once Bolasie is nailed, finding the 0.5 to get him from Gaston Ramirez will be my top priority. So Gaston Ramirez was one of the big concerns coming out of game week two. He looked like a rising star after game week one. He had a near goal and also a fantastic assist to Negredo, speaking of 6.5 forwards. So we need to talk. Josh, we need to talk about midfielders. Seriously.
We do. It's time we talked about midfielders.
So, and I think there's a whole range of midfielders that's really plaguing everyone right now, from the cheap midfielders to the mid-tier and to who even are the heavy hitter midfielders. I mean, if Kapuwe is the number one player in the game right now, I don't think we've really seen the true midfield heavy hitters emerge just yet.
And I'm not sure that we will, actually, for a little while here. I mean, it's kind of a tricky... It's been an unusual start of the season. I think part of that is, you know, because of the Euro Cup, we have a lot of top midfielders who haven't really been playing yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen 15 minutes of Mesut Ozil so far this season. And, you know, Nolito has really only played cameo roles, you know, since he's come on.
Yeah.
So I think that it's going to start to shake out, but I don't know that it's fully shaken itself out yet. Dave from Burnley, who... we could have like a whole Dave from Burnley corner, because he asked us several questions. We'll get to like maybe like two. You know, you got to be fair with these things.
Exactly.
Dave said,
"We'll take your questions offline, Dave."
I will say, Dave, he's now Differential Dave on Twitter. He's a very good Twitter follow. So if you you're looking for more good FPL people on Twitter, I would select him. He said, "How do you find value in the 9.5 million bracket?" I guess the quick answer there is that you have to not try to find someone who fits that 9.5 million slot, right? Yeah. And if Eric Lamella is going to be playing like a 9.5 million midfielder, then that's fine. Yeah, and the money can get reinvested in the attack or the
forward line. It's the Riyad case, in that Riyad Mahrez basically was playing as a 9.5 midfielder all last season, and only now this season is he 9.5, and who knows if he'll actually perform at that level. But yeah.
So I actually have... My pick here, Brandon.
Okay.
This is actually he's an obscure player. You've probably never heard of him.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not even sure how to say his name. There's an umlaut.
Is it Lyndon Gooch?
It is Lyndon Gooch.
I knew it.
Had you ever heard of Lyndon Gooch?
No, never. And we're Americans.
I can't believe there three Americans all follow the U.S. men's national team, all follow really closely. Never heard of this guy.
I was on his Wikipedia page earlier. He's made four appearances for the U23 team. And okay. He looks like a stud. He looks
good in today's match.
He's got a man's body.
But it's not Lyndon Gooch. It's Mesut Ozil.
Okay, yeah.
$9.5 million looked fantastic in the 20 minutes that he played in the Arsenal-Leicester match. And Arsenal's fixtures, I mean, Arsenal is, you know, I mean, everyone who follows us on Twitter knows that I'm just constantly, like, sharing articles about the end of the Wenger era. I'm like, it's like my way of processing my grief over what Arsene Wenger is now doing to the squad.
Yeah, you and every other Arsenal fan.
I know, we're all just in full meltdown right now. But their fixtures are bleeding spectacular, man. They're playing away to Watford in game week 3. They're home to Southampton in game week 4. Away to Hull in game week 5. Chelsea match, which isn't that scary given what we've seen of the Chelsea defense so far. And then it's an unbelievable run from game week 7 through 10. They're away to Burnley, home to Swansea, home to Middlesbrough, away to Sunderland. And it's fantastic. I mean, you know, so I really think that, and he's the one who's going to play, right? He's going to play 80 plus minutes every single match. Yep. Completely evolved in the attack. Looked like he was fully ready to play in game week 2. So I think he's really tempting. I mean, I suppose I would at least consider him as an alternative to Hazard as one of my midfielder replacements. But yeah, I really think that he is he's where the value is going to be found, because I think his ownership level right now is
4.9%.
4.9%.
I mean, that's ridiculous considering the season he had last. I mean, obviously everyone was smart enough to not pick him up when he wasn't going to play.
Right. 6 goals and 19 assists last season. Played basically every single match. You know, he had like a little bit of a poor run of form near the end of the season, but you can hardly blame him, because, you know, Arsenal doesn't believe in squad depth, so he had to play basically every single match.
One of the Arsenal midfielders I had my eye on was Santi Cazorla. He looks integral to that midfield once again, and priced at 7.5. One of the reasons, though, that I really liked him and was thinking of bringing him in was he was on every set piece when he actually got into the match this weekend, taking every corner and taking a few free kicks. But speaking of Mesut Ozil, when Mesut Ozil gets in to the starting lineup, Ozil's going to be on all those dead balls. So I do get a little more concerned about what Cazorla is going to look like once the midfield actually starts to come back together.
It's unclear what's happening with that midfielder right now. I don't know why Granit Xhaka is coming off the bench in game week 1 and getting subbed in the 60th minute.
I thought it was ludicrous that Xhaka comes off before Coughlin comes off. Coughlin on a yellow card. I mean, I know Xhaka loves a meaty challenge as well.
Almost hit a red.
He should have had a red.
Yeah.
Coughlin is one of my favorite players to hate on. I think that guy stinks.
Lojun on Twitter, that's Lojun, I don't know why I'm spelling his name. He knows how to spell his name. On Twitter says, with Arsenal having relatively good fixtures from game week 3 to game week 10, are players like Ozil and Sanchez worth looking at? I guess I kind of put the cart before the horse here, but yes, I do think that. I think that Ozil is worth looking at. I think that Sanchez is not worth looking at. I think that he looks a little, what's the word they use? A little cynical right now. I think that he's wiped out from playing basically nonstop for the last couple of years. It was less 3 years, really.
Same thing last season.
World Cup and 2 Copa Americas.
It took him like at least 10 game weeks before he started looking back to his normal self last season. You'd expect the same thing this season.
Exactly. And, you know, I was reading the Ars blog this morning, and they were talking about how, you know, they're trying to play him as a forward right now, but it's just not a natural fit for him. So he keeps drifting out wide and sort of passing it. And suddenly they're in a position where there are no forwards and you just have a bunch of midfielders who are passing the ball around.
Yeah. Sanchez when Giroud is playing, because Giroud's hold-up play is pretty decent, and he's able to just play a guy like Sanchez through behind the back line, and I don't see Sanchez as the guy just doing that by himself.
Now, granted, this could be a moot point, because Sanchez should be moving back to the midfield now, you know, with Giroud back and playing, but I still don't know that Giroud's going to be playing the full night. You know, it's kind of a tricky situation, and what about Theo Walcott? What do you think about Walcott? Is he on your radar at all?
He's a great whipping boy, but he's looked fine at times.
Yeah, I mean, at $7.5 million, I guess you're kind of, at least you're finally getting what you pay for mm-hmm. with Theo Walcott. I mean, for a long time, he's been overpriced, $9 million, $8.5 million. I mean, I don't know if I can get his starting, I guess I'll just be able to see what his end price was, but he, yeah, I mean, Theo Walcott has been $9 million or higher since the 2011-2012 season.
Yeah.
So this season he's finally $7.5 million. Now, that granted, there may be times when he's not starting every game. I actually think he probably will be starting consistently. But I think for that good run, I mean, Theo Walcott's like a bit of a
you really do think he'll be a regular starter? You think?
I mean, I think so.
To me, he's yeah.
With Aaron Ramsey out for a month, I think he's definitely I think they need him right now.
I don't know. If you're slotting in Ozil, guys who haven't played, Giroux and Ozil, if you think they're going to be starting, I don't see where Walcott really fits in. If you're keeping Cazorla if you're keeping Xhaka in, maybe another defensive midfielder like Coughlin.
I mean, I guess they would have to not do the two defensive midfielder formation that they have that they used a little bit last season, and you'd just play Xhaka and Coughlin would be on the outs, I guess.
I would want to see Oxlade-Chamberlain starting over Walcott if I were an Arsenal fan.
Yeah, it's just the Ox. It's just not the Ox is destined to go to a club like Everton at some point. I just don't. He's had some injury issues, and I mean, you know, the guy only scored one goal last season. You know, it's just not. I mean, he looks good in the preseason every year, but he's battled health problems, and I just don't know that he's quite what Arsenal need. I mean, they need him as long as he's okay playing 30 minutes, you know, 20 matches a season, right, and playing in all the League Cup matches and all that stuff. So, I think actually Walcott is an interesting option, and I don't want to write him off. And again, I think it's because of the price. Alexis Sanchez is $11 million, and he looks completely worn out, you know, in game week two. Theo Walcott looks like he's really trying right now. I think he's going to be starting most game weeks.
Okay.
So I think that for this run of fixtures, he's actually an interesting option. But all that said, I would go, I would go Ozil and really only Ozil. I don't know that I'd really look at even someone like Cazorla, because I think he's going to be playing deeper once everybody's back and playing.
Josh, this is the midfielder roundtable, not the Arsenal roundtable. So let's,
let's
get another comment comes from
the one club I know a lot about.
At Fat Gorilla says, all of my out of position cheap mids keep getting injured. What to do? So now we're thinking about cheaper midfield options. We all have to have them, particularly if we're slotting Aguero and Ibra up front. We're all going to have at least two guys under 6.5 million in our midfield.
Right.
So going back to Gaston Ramirez getting subbed, just like a sucker punch to all of us managers, gets taken out at the 58th minute or something, robbing him of two precious points. I don't know. I still like Ramirez. Should have still been on the field, and I think that Burrow would have looked a lot better the rest of that game had he been on, and I was kind of felt reinvigorated as a Ramirez owner, seeing how Burrow started to fall to pieces after he came off the field. So I'm not worried about him.
I'm not super worried about him either. It gives me pause, certainly. Anytime a player gets subbed off the 58th minute, you wonder if you're dealing with a De La Feu situation where the manager, you know, he was subbed off in the first match too. So you wonder if maybe they feel like he's not a 90 minute player, you know?
Right.
And that's a little scary, especially like you said, because you're going to have to play all your midfielders or, you know, you're going to really need to go four deep, and you're going to have to be smart about finding value all the way down your midfield right now.
Yeah, I don't know enough. I don't know enough about Burrow, but they could just be managing his fitness because of, you know, his longstanding leg injury, and maybe they're just bringing him up to speed, and he'll be.
Which is another concern, though, too, right? That this guy is injury prone, so
sure.
That tends to come back to haunt you every year, right? I mean, look at the Ox and Jack Wilshere.
Yeah, so I have Jordan Ibe in the midfield, and I watched that Bournemouth game today, and Jordan Ibe looked pretty terrible. You mentioned that he also looked terrible in game week one.
Yeah.
And he just looked really slow. He wasn't tracking back on defense, which they paid $15 million for this guy, and if he's not going to hustle and he's going to act like a diva and also make terrible decisions and not look good. So, I mean, I'm kind of stuck with Ibe until I can bank two transfers, because I don't see who else I would bring in for Jordan Ibe. All these defensive mids.
What about Robert Snodgrass? I mean, you know, their fixtures aren't great, but I mean, at $5.5 million, that guy is a pretty decent option. We may have underrated him a little bit coming into the podcast. I mean, if anyone's going to be scoring on Hall, he's probably going to be involved. Now, granted, they scored two goals in the last match, and he wasn't involved in either one. So that's quite literally not true.
I hear what you're saying. I'm trying not to get too excited about this whole team. I mean, the merciless smack talking against Hull in the preseason, I don't want to get swayed just by two decent results to start the season. Now, granted, I think those are two pretty compelling results, but are we really talking about Snodgrass? I'd rather wait it out with a guy like Jordan Ibe than buy into the whole squad.
Okay, fair enough. I don't think it's essential to. You don't need to move heaven and earth to fill your fourth midfielder slot instantly. But, I mean, I think Nathan Redman is another player that we talked about a lot in the lead of the podcast. I thought he looked not great in game week two, but it's an away match at Man United. It's about as tough of a match you're going to have all season. So I wouldn't read too much into that. And in two of their next three fixtures, they're home. Game week three, they're home to Sunderland. Game week five, they're home to Swansea. So I'm very excited about having Redmond for those two fixtures. I think especially if you're looking at they get a little bit worse starting in game week six. So if you're just looking for a player to have for about 3 weeks, I think that Nathan Redmond is an interesting option.
Yeah.
Still only 6.1, still only selected by 10.8% of managers.
I was just looking at these Stoke midfielders like Shaqiri and Bojan. I mean, Bojan 6.0. If the Stoke team actually starts firing, Bojan is, I think, a really good option at 2.5 ownership.
We know he's on pens now, too.
Yeah, and a well taken pen. I mean, if Shaqiri is quick to come back from injury, and you know how that Stoke midfield looked when it was totally gelled for, I mean, what, two or three games last season?
Yeah,
I think they do have it in them. So Stoke's still a mid-table side, and if they're going to get to mid-table, Bojan's going to have some goals. I like him too.
I mean, it's hilarious looking at this list of the top scoring midfielders right now. I mean, it's all defensive midfielders. Leroy Fer at least is more of an attacker, but I mean, you've got Kapuwe, who's not going to be scoring long term. You've got Victor Wanyama, sort of the classic fifth midfielder who scored a pretty lucky goal. He basically was in the right place for it was a headed goal that he kind of got in the way of and headed it along. I mean, Gareth Barry, this guy is not going to be scoring any points.
This weekend could destroy every single casual in the game. Like, they're going to go to this list and be like, all right, great, I'm bringing in Kapuwe, Barry, Fer.
Got Craig Gardner down there.
Yeah. And they're Kapuwe scored one goal over the course of the last three seasons. It's crazy that he's got 2-2 now. There's no conceivable way he keeps it up.
It's true, but his ownership is good. It's going to be an amazing rise and fall with Kapuya's ownership, because some people are going to bring him in. He's only at 8.3% right now. That's going to get up to like 30% once people start playing their wild cards. And then he's going to go like 8 weeks without doing anything, or 12 weeks or longer, right? He didn't do anything all of last season, right? I mean, the whole year he had let's see. He had zero goals and one assist in all 38 weeks last season. So there's a good chance he won't do anything for literally the rest of the year.
And I think he played every single game for Watford. It's not like he only played half the games.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's no reason to drop him if you have him in your team already, or if you're – he's an okay person to wildcard in, I suppose, too, just because he's clearly in some kind of good run of form right now, but I think his price is going to get down to like 4.2 in game week 20, because everyone's going to have him and they're going to ultimately drop him.
Okay, Josh, at Steve Fott Music on Twitter says, I need a mid-priced midfielder. Who would you pick, Morales or Mata? So this is an interesting question, looking now at the Manchester United midfield that's also being rotated. Juan Mata, what do you think about that?
I don't know. I don't think long term he's going to be.
The writing is on the wall, isn't it? With
Mata, I think it is. I still wonder if he's in the shop window right now for Man U. If they're trying to you know, I mean, I know Everton was rumored for a while. Like, God, wouldn't that be a great fit for them? I don't know. I think that. I think ultimately Henrik Mkhitaryan, who's an absolute class player, is going to be playing in that Wan-Mata slot. And I don't really know why it hasn't happened yet. It feels like kind of a power play, sort of like there are no automatic spots on this team. I mean, I don't know. I mean, like Mata has apparently earned it. I don't want to be totally cynical about Mourinho's intentions, even though everything that Jose Mourinho has done throughout his entire career would lead us to feel cynical about his intentions. But I do think that I wouldn't have Mata, and I wouldn't have. I know there's a question that Simon at SCAR UK said thoughts on Herrera at United. He's starting to play more regularly. I mean, you know, Herrera didn't even start in game week two, so
he played 9 minutes. So I don't really know what that means in terms of more regularly.
There's no one in that midfield that I want right now, with the exception, I suppose, of your boy, Brandon.
My boy, my
Anthony
son.
Anthony, your child.
My your son, child, Anthony Martial.
I mean, Wan-Mata only scored one goal, and it was, you know, he was basically given the goal on a silver platter. So I wouldn't necessarily read too much into that. I mean, Martial, I thought he was a little peripheral in this game, to be totally honest. I
am concerned about that, too, if he becomes an afterthought in this Pogba, Mkhitaryan. And Wayne Rooney looks like he's going to keep his place in that starting 11, and if it's Mkhitaryan, Pogba, Ibra, and Rooney, you are concerned about how Martial fits in and how active he is in the goal scoring.
Part of my concern in the second half of that Man U match, you know, so they go up 2-0, and basically the game is over, right? I mean, all the life goes out of that game when Ibra scores that goal, and it felt like they could have actually scored more, and I felt like Martial was maybe stopping them from scoring more because I think he really wanted to get a goal. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of breaks where Martial wasn't like – he had tunnel vision. You know, he's driving down, and that he is going to shoot on goal. It's going to be his goal. And it concerns me a little bit that maybe he isn't quite ready to embrace his role as a – yeah, as a wide player, and maybe he still has that forwards mentality. Now, granted, that could be a great thing if he's in good form and scoring goals, and suddenly you've got the wide player scoring goals. But there's a little bit of like Theo Walcott there, and that was a bit of a concern for me. But you know, they've got a pretty good run of fixtures coming up. Away to Hull. Away to Hull. I shouldn't like even be like away to Hull. It's a good, it's an exciting one.
Claxon.
Then you got the Man City Derby and then away to Watford. So I don't know. I mean, I guess I at least have to consider bringing in Martial. I've kind of been locked into this Eden Hazard move for game week three. But, you know, Martial away to Hull is a pretty alluring fixture.
Let me throw one out for you, Josh. Raheem Sterling. 8.0. Now, the source of much derision. I have a list of this is a strange season for me. I have a list of like midfielders that I have a long-standing distaste for, like Eric Lamella and now Kevin Morales and Raheem Sterling. Clearly the season hasn't really totally taken off yet for me to be considering all these guys, but Sterling was heavily involved in everything going forward this past weekend against Stoke. He petered out a little bit in the second half, but he does look like he's a little bit of a project for Pep, and if it works, 8.0 could be a relatively fair price for him.
I mean, you're absolutely right. I feel like the player that I really want to have in that squad is Nolito, and I guess I just want to wait until he's definitely a starter, which should be sometime soon.
Well,
you know,
I'm curious to see what happens to his price. So he dipped now to 8.9, but now he scored two gimme goals coming in as a sub, but is that going to inflate his price back up to 9.0? Do you need to buy now?
Well, I mean, no. I buy now for a tenth of a point, you know. I do think that what I hope happens is that it sort of gets Pep, you know, like feeling like he's ready for the rigors of the Premier League or whatever, and now he's going to be starting consistently. Once Nolito, if Nolito is a starter, I mean, that guy is like straight into my squad. I mean, I really am excited about having him at some point soon. Here's my plan right now, Brandon.
Okay.
See if this is going to work.
Okay. So I feel like I'm in your inner sanctum right now.
I've got my two transfers I'm going to make this week. And the next week, Vardy is going to go, and moving Vardy into some other midfielder is going to free up, or into some other 6.5 million forward, or 6.6, wherever they're at right now, is going to free up around 3 million in cash, depending on what I have left over from my midfield moves. I can then turn Nathan Redmond into Nolito right before Southampton's fixtures get worse.
Okay.
I mean, think this could work. I think this could be, this is a real strategy.
It is.
I'm not saying it's a good. It is literally a strategy. I don't know if it's a good one or a bad one, but it's it's a strategy.
I can see a leg break or a ligament tear in there somewhere that's going to totally screw up your plans.
Yeah, you're probably right. I've never been able to plan 3 weeks ahead without it ever. It always goes like totally awry.
It goes awry. Either there's another guy that you really have to get somewhere along the line that really hits form, or somebody gets suspended, screws up your plan.
Speaking of have to get, let's move on to our next hot topic, Brandon. Ibra and Aguero. Ton of questions about Ibra and Aguero this week. James Drury, who's another good Twitter follower and a podcaster himself, says, now that he's in penalties, he's surely a must. # always Captain Zlatan.
And now, did you see Mourinho's comments at a press conference in which he said clearly that he has three guys on pens? Pogba, Rooney, and Zlatan, and he then leaves it up to them as to the order in which they cycle through that rotation. Now, that's Mourinho famous for his gamesmanship in press conferences. Is there much truth to that? You could really see Zlatan taking every PK, but it's not a certainty that it's a lock. No.
We didn't talk about I want to stay on the Ibra Aguero thing, but just as an aside, did you? I don't know. I said you were flying home last night. Did you watch any of Pogba? Like he looked pretty good.
I just saw the highlights, and from what I could tell from the highlights, Pogba was first on the scene to celebrate the goals. Now, I don't know if that was written into the contract, like we have to get a good shot of you and Zlatan celebrating at the corner flag, just the two of you.
He looks completely awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think he's necessarily a great fantasy asset or even anyone you have to. He's like just someone to watch for. I mean, I could totally see him scoring in this Hull match in Game Week 3, but I don't think long term he's worth 8.5 million, given that his role is not to be scoring goals and he's setting the play up. You know, he's moving things along,
he took a few shots from outside the box, so that could turn into something.
He did. I think he might have stung Forster's palms at one time or another, but he didn't look that dangerous in terms of scoring. You know, he just looked awesome. I mean, like when you watch him play and the way he played with Zlatan, you think this Man U team could actually win the league this year. Not something I would have said even, two or three weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, getting back to the topic at hand, TomTweet84 asks on Twitter, is it worth a reshuffle of the team to get Ibra and Aguero? Would -8 be too much? So we're talking about, are both of them a must-have in your team? And if they are, how do you get them in? Are you burning points? Are you wild carding? Or are you trying to play a long, complex game plan out to get them in?
I think you said it at the beginning of the podcast. I don't know how you can avoid having these two players right now, especially given that their fixtures are good.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many reasons to have them. They're scoring in every single match. There's no reason to think they're going to stop anytime soon. Their ownership level is tipping up over 50% for both players. And their fixtures are good. I mean, there's nothing. This is not game week 37. You know, where you need to be looking for differential forward options. You just have to have them. And part of being good at this game is being defensive. And it's a real problem that I have sometimes. I do not often play good defense, and it comes back to haunt me. But I got them, and I'm happy that I do, because they absolutely saved my week. And I really think that. Yeah, if you don't have them and you can't, I would either burn points or wild card to bring them both in. It's just not worth not having them unless you really just want to be a rogue player that doesn't kind of play the right way, or that doesn't play the quote unquote right way, because I don't think there's any reason not to have these guys.
For those of you listening at home, in your car, on the bus maybe, just watching Josh now on video chat, I have never seen him gesticulate as much doing this podcast as he did just then. So be clear.
Very passionate about this.
He means this, and I couldn't agree more. Yeah. It's setting up to be the season of Aguero and Ibra just right from the outset. you could see hindsight 2020. You could see it coming from a mile away, though. So it's I like you feel very good to be set up for this and not have to worry about it, because I would definitely be worrying about it if not.
I've heard some people complain about, I mean, it is kind of frustrating. It's frustrating because they're so expensive. And so it basically means that everyone has $24.5 million tied up. But at least there are two options this year. At least every week there's a tough call about who you have to captain. I mean, yeah. You know, last season when Aguero was healthy, you kind of always had to captain him, you know? Or if you didn't captain him, you were taking a big risk. And, yeah. I mean, game week three, we've got, you know, you've got Aguero at home to West Ham and Ibra away to Hull City. I mean, that, like, flip a coin, you know. Yeah. I mean, it could end up being a neutral like it was this week, but I don't think in most weeks you're going to have both of them scoring two goals and picking up three bonus points. I think that, you know, something's going to happen to one of them in a match, or they're just not going to. I mean, obviously these guys are going to score two goals in every single match, so we're going to see some swings in points because you're going to have to guess right, you know, week in and week out, and that's. You know, I mean, at least that's something. At least it's not, you know, totally kind of the same thing every week with Aguero.
Watching James Collins today against Bournemouth, he looks like he's ready to commit some penalty box fouls against Man City next weekend.
Yeah, he's got that fire, you know.
Yeah,
Jimmy Collins.
Seems like a real jackass, that guy.
So there was also kind of a question about Kane. I mean, a lot of people sort of, you know, there were some people, you know, went Vardy, which obviously was a huge mistake, and all of us Vardy owners regret it. But Harry Kane's been pretty frustrating too. I mean, they did pick up an assist in game week two, but, you know, differential Dave says, why does Kane take 8 weeks to get going every year? And Paul Nairn said, stick with Kane or get Ibra now. Now, we already talked about. Yes, get Ibra now. But what do you think about Kane? I mean, they're going into some pretty good fixtures, and why isn't he playing better? I mean, what's the deal there?
Well, watching England in the Euros, Kane looked truly remarkably terrible, which was really vexing because we know he's an amazing player. He had a great season last year. I guess I don't even want to think about it because there's no way I can have Harry Kane this season. If I'm keeping Ibra and Aguero and say I have a heavy hitter like Hazard in my midfield, there's no possible conceivable way in which I can afford Harry Kane. So he's sort of like immediately out of the conversation, and it could become a season in which you just have to bank that Harry Kane will hit some kind of form. He will start scoring goals, and then it will be a test of do you have the fortitude to stand strong and not. Okay, so there will be a week, we can imagine, right, where Ibra blanks or he just gets rested because of a Champions League fixture.
Kane, it may happen 5 days from now. Yeah. It may happen Kane, 26 days from now.
But Kane then comes in, he scores a hat trick, and then you're like, well, I see these fixtures. They're a little dicey. Maybe I bring in Kane for Ibra.
This happened last season, remember? I mean, he had this really poor start of the season. He scored a hat trick away to Bournemouth, and you're like, well. And his ownership was pretty low at the time. And you're like, well, do I bring him in now? Yeah. And then he started banging in goals single week.
Wins the golden boot.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're right. It's going to be a real test. And I do think that, you know, given that the nature of things, Aguero and Zlatan aren't going to stay healthy the whole year. So, this is not a problem we have to worry about at the moment because Kane's out of form. These guys are doing well. Right. You can go with the three-man, you know, forward line too. But I really felt burned this week just given that because I had this expensive forward line, you know, with you know, Aguero, Kane Ibra and Vardy. Thank you. Yeah. You know, I couldn't bring in a Spurs defender. I didn't have an Arsenal defender, and you know, I have these cheapos, you know, outside of Luke Shaw, and they didn't come through, you know, which they usually don't. And so that's really the problem with not having a balanced squad is it looks awesome when everything clicks, but when it doesn't, you're like, well, why am I like a chump who's got this 10 million striker when everyone else is picking up 10 points from Alvaro Negredo or, you know, Andre Gray, which brings us to our final hot topic of the week, Brandon. the third Striker Symposium. Now, you said you prepared your papers. I can hear the shuffling of papers on your desk.
Yeah.
So we knew going into the season that there were a lot of 6.5 billion Striker options available, kind of a whole wealth of them. And I would add that there's kind of a 7.5 million option now, too, because Christian Benteke has officially joined Crystal Palace.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's a very tempting option at 7.5 million.
Sure. At one of the crummiest teams in the entire league.
But a team full of speedy wingers.
Uh-huh.
I like what it might look like there. You know, you've got Zaha and Punchin and these guys, you know, running down the flanks, and then you've got a big tall guy. It's uh-huh. basically what Arsenal do, right? I mean, they got their kind of point guy in the front. And,
yeah.
And do you think that Benteke is better than Olivier Giroud?
No.
I don't think so either.
Yeah. I mean, not by miles. I don't think Giroud is better by miles. Giroud, well, that's a very interesting question. Benteke basically took a season off at Liverpool. When he was at Villa, he carried that team on his shoulders, and Giroud is never going to carry a team unless he moves to DC United or something like that.
Right.
And also, Giroud, he fits so nicely into what they're trying to do there at Arsenal that might also make him look better than he actually is. But on the whole, I think Giroud's technique is better than Benteke's.
I think so, too. I was just raising the question.
Yeah, I thought it was a very interesting question, Josh.
Lazaros at Verides USA says, please lend support to those of us currently in shock that Andy Carroll is still Andy Carroll. Hashtag Hammergeddon, hashtag 6.5 mil. Poor Carroll. God, it will never end with him, will it?
No, it won't. And it's sad because he's a rare sort of striker. I mean, we're going back to our conversation we were just having about big men like Benteke and Giroud. Carroll is right up there with. It's really hard to judge how good he is because we haven't seen enough of him. And when he does, he'll do crazy things like score hat trick. You know, that lineup that West Ham put out today against Bournemouth like looked completely ludicrous on paper. There was like not a single good player on that team apart from maybe Antonio, who had a fantastic season last year.
Yeah, it's brutal. And with Payet, I don't know. I don't think what he has is that big of a problem, but. Yeah, they gotta kind of, because yeah, A is out now and Lanzini was out and Ferguli, I think, is a little. I think he's got a hamstring injury, they say, and yeah, so it's, and Sacco's out, Carroll's out. It's a strange squad.
The first bullet on my white paper at this symposium I'd like to present to the Always Cheating listeners is, don't sleep on Sam Vokes. Sam Vokes is cheaper than Andre Gray, okay?
He's 6.0. I was not expecting this.
6.0, uh-huh. 0.6% ownership. The strike he took to open up the scoring this weekend was sensational. Like,
and you said this paper was peer-reviewed.
Yeah, yes, it was. Vokes is out there scoring goals for Wales in the Euros. This guy is not a joke. Like, he's out there playing sports all the time.
I don't see anybody laughing, Brandon.
And I thought Andre Gray, I said this at the start of the pod, even though I'm an owner, I'm a little worried about the way he looked out on the field. Looked really slow.
He own another human being, Brandon. But he's on your team, yes.
But he had a Vardy-esque breakaway.
That's the kind of thing he would talk about on his Twitter feed, probably.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I wish I could own all these people. What a strange.
What a horrible tweet.
Those were you just couldn't even dream up like worse tweets, like more.
I mean,
terrible,
it makes me,
dehumanizing.
It
tweets.
Honestly makes me feel like I shouldn't have him on my team. I mean, yeah. I don't know. It's just a game, but my goodness, that was really offensive.
Well, we should.
I mean, he came out. He did a full throated apology, and you know, I know that the paragon of virtue that is Joey Barton stood up for him. Today as well. So,
uh-huh.
And he was basically like, I was 20 and dumb and now I'm better. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, I guess, but it's not like homophobia isn't a huge problem in the sport. So, that was kind of less than cool.
But Sam Vokes, seriously, he's that is a strike partnership. I was going to say that Gray had this breakaway where he was in on goal and he was two central defenders basically strolled up the field to catch up to him and totally put him off. But Vokes is part of that partnership, and if Gray actually comes into,
I heard the ambulance that I called to come pick you up because you clearly lost your mind.
Oh, here they come, the Vokes police. I'm going to start a support group online called Vocal Vokes, people who are unafraid to speak up in favor of Sam Vokes.
Pretty good Vokes.
But this could be
okay. Why are there not more Vokes puns in the team names? There should be more.
Imagine Deeney and Igalo last season, right? Like, okay, so Igalo is your Andre Gray and Deeney is your Sam Vokes. I know we often compare Deeney's body to Gray's body, but
yeah, but Igalo finished with like 40 more points than Deeney at the end of the last season.
Yeah, but I think you could still say there was a point in the season at which you were much better served having Deeney in your squad than Igalo.
Okay, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I think it's I don't agree with you, but I think it's a fair assessment.
This from a guy who made fun of me mercilessly for promoting Negredo in the preseason.
I was wrong. I don't like it when people on podcasts or radio or wherever. I don't want this to turn into one of these like ESPN First Takes things where I don't want to be Rush Limbaugh over here. Like, I'm willing to admit that I'm wrong on something. Clearly I was wrong on Negredo. He's looked pretty good in the first two matches. We'll see if he can keep it up. He couldn't keep it up when he was at City. The player that I will nominate, and I wish their fixtures were better, eventually they will be, is Abel Hernandez, who has picked up a goal and assist already in the season. He's priced at $6 million. He was banging him in at basically the same rate as Andre Gray in the preseason. And he's got a little bit of Premier League experience as well. Not a ton. He played sparingly in the 2014-15 season. He did bag four goals and an assist. So I think that Abel Hernandez at $6 million is a really tempting player. I mean, the thing about Vokes and Gray is that if Vokes were like Christian Stuani is kind of a weird one now, right? Because he bangs in. I don't keep saying bangs in. I don't think I've ever said bangs in goals before in my life.
I love it. You're talking like a real lad.
Yeah, now I've said it like six times in 2 minutes. But, you know, he scores two. He's got a brace. And he's $4.9 million. You're like, well, that's an option. And if Vokes were $5 million, I'd be interested. But I think because Vokes and Gray, one is six, one is 6.5, it's not enough of a difference for me to look his way.
Okay. I mean, given what we're asking people to do with Eber and Aguero, I think 0.5 could be like could make or break your team.
That's a good point.
Early in the season.
Okay, that's a very fair point. So I think that – I don't know. I think Abel Hernandez is an option. This is ignoring the biggest one, which is, you know, Negredo himself. I mean, yeah. $6.6 million has looked really good so far. Middlesbrough have pretty good fixtures to come still. I don't think that away to West Brom match in Game Week 3 is actually a very good fixture. I think it's a borderline bad fixture, I think. But then Crystal Palace at home – and then it gets a little dicier from there. Everton away, Spurs home, West Ham away. They play Arsenal and Man City in game weeks 9 and 11. So I would definitely advocate for bringing Negredo in, but I think that it might be more of a short-term thing. You know, bring him in for 3 or 4 weeks, and then you can move him over to Abel Hernandez at that point, who has pretty good fixtures from, I think, game week 7 or 8 on.
I'll tell you this, Josh. If Andre Gray picks up some value to 6.6 during this game week, I will swap Negredo in for Gray. That's how I feel
really?
About that. Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting. Okay.
I'll put the always cheating promise on that.
Does the Twitter thing affect you at all? Does it make you less likely to have him? Or are you just you
don't give a shit? Well, I have gone on record hundreds of times saying that I love Tom Cruise movies, and I will go see any Jack Reacher excluded. I will see any Tom Cruise movie because I find him wildly charismatic. He seems like a not even human. I mean, granted, just by him being a Scientologist means he's a part of an alien species or something. Okay. But so I have a history of supporting unsupportable people, I guess I should say.
All right. Oh, that was a mouthful. Chris Scott Grant, Shabo Shetsi on Twitter says, Andre Gray, goal plus an assist, only one bonus point, enough to ditch for Negredo. Now, this is Chris Scott Grant. It was like on my case about Andre Gray in the offseason on Twitter. I guess he like sent me like the box score of their like match against Rangers or something. But now he's looking to drop Gray all of a sudden. So I guess you yourself think that it's time to ditch Gray for Negredo.
I am with Chris on this one. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm with Uppercut Panda.
Yeah.
Uppercut Panda, I actually want to say to you, come join me on the Vocal Vokes minority group.
Pretty good Vokes. Eric Sibbles on Facebook said, I got a pity assist from Negredo. How about that Stuani, though? And that immediately made me wonder if he was a Uruguayan player, because Eric Sibbles lets us know basically anytime anything good. He is a Uruguayan player. There you go. Stuani, yeah, 4.9 million. Same fixtures as Negredo. I guess he's going to be playing for them now, right? You don't suddenly bench a guy after they score a brace, right? And two very good goals at that.
Yeah.
Well taken, pretty lethal. So.
I mean,
I think that that's an option. I mean, like you said, you know, if you can find a guy who can score for, you know, he's only at 4.9 million, it's certainly tempting.
Yeah. And there's a whole Uruguayan connection happening there, too, because Gaston Ramirez is also Uruguayan.
It would be Uruguayan if you played for Burnley. all right. That's it for our Good Striker Symposium. We had a couple other questions that didn't quite fit in. One is from Jeff Petter. He says, a couple of questions. Are Man City always going to concede? And then he said, Sterling, discuss, looks good to me. Now, Sterling, we already talked about. Man City, it was kind of frustrating. I actually thought that Stones looked pretty good in the match. And, you know, I mean, there was nothing, the penalty wasn't his fault. And the yellow card was kind of silly. It was unnecessary. It was kind of annoying. But I think they're starting to figure it out. I have a little bit of a concern, I guess, that if he makes any mistakes, that he's going to get benched for Company when Company's back and healthy, and that you have a Company Otamendi backline.
Yeah, you and I were debating this a little bit. If Company is going to slot back into the starting lineup, who does he come in, Stones or Otamendi? And I felt like Stones probably. Otamendi just has settled into that back line for City.
Yeah. I kind of like Otamendi, actually. I was pretty impressed with him in this match.
Yeah, he's a strong defender. He's good on corners, both offensively and defensively. But yeah. I agree with you, though, regarding City conceding, because Pep is clearly figuring things out. They looked so organized in the first half of the Stoke City match, and they looked like
huge difference from game week 1 and 2.
Yeah, and I could see it really evolving even further in the next month or so, and them keeping a lot of clean sheets going into the second half of the season.
I mean, let's face it, Pep Guardiola is an absolutely fantastic manager. This squad is loaded with really good players, and within the next 4 or 5 game weeks, we're going to know who these top players are, and I really think that most of us will have three Man City players. I mean, you could almost say two Man City players, because Aguero is such a, you know, he's like baked in. He's such an assumption. So he's so baked into that squad.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried too much. And I know that Bakary Sagna is had just like a slight injury, and he's going to be back in that squad too. So I think that defense will look better in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Jeremiah Johnson said, Nolito or no Lolito? No Nolito.
That's hard to say. No Nolito. You can't say that three times fast.
I think you could bring in Nolito for game week 3. I think he's probably ready to start. It concerns me a little bit, I guess, that he started one, came off early, started another one, came in late.
Jesus Navas was criminal in this Stoke game. He was putting passes out of play to nobody. I would be shocked if Navas gets another look at starting 11.
It's so interesting. You know, we talked about this a little bit. You and I went to the we saw a very nice NYCFC 1-0 win yesterday, and we were
it was Lampard versus Gerrard, with a cameo from Ashley Cole.
So, yeah, speaking of former Man City midfielders, it's still still weird to think of Lampard that way. So, you know, we were talking about the Nolito thing a little bit, and it just it's amazing how someone like Hayes is not like some players just have such a nose for a goal, you know, such a poacher's sense. And he scored two great poacher's goals at the end of this match. And it's just incredible that Jesus Navas has played, you know, for what, three or four seasons now for Man City. And he has never had a moment like that where he was unmarked within no one was within 5 feet of him. And he just flat out missed oh my God. I'm like working myself into a corner. The point is Jesus Navas doesn't score goals. Nolito scores goals. Yeah. I think he'll be in the squad long term. Maybe not by game week three, though.
Yeah, it's totally true. And I think I said it earlier that it's worth contemplating bringing in Nolito now just to maybe capitalize on his decreased price tag.
Yeah. Scott Gill, final question of the game week, says, what is the template backline? Interesting question.
That is an interesting question.
I think it's almost easier if we talk about this like in terms of teams. You know, like what are three teams that have backlines that you'd want here in your
right.
defense?
Yeah, that's true. Well, Spurs, we didn't even touch upon this. We were talking about how to bring Harry Kane into your striker lineup. And I think right now with Spurs, the easier, at least short-term option, is to have a defender and or a Spurs midfielder. I know you're looking to get rid of Dele Alli. But Spurs have this great run of fixtures coming up. They've always had a great defense. Michel Vorm, great keeper, even with Lloris out injured. I think they'll keep a lot of cleanies. And then United. I've doubled up on United with De Gea and Luke Shaw. I think they are a must, absolute must for your defense.
Yeah, well, certainly one defender. I do... I feel a little bad about not having De Gea makes these Man U matches kind of hard. Like it's a strange experience because you're almost kind of rooting for a goal to be conceded against them, because I think De Gea's ownership, it's ludicrously high.
46.7%.
46.7%. So it's, you know, extremely high and probably only going to keep climbing from there. I mean, the thing about De Gea is you're only ever going to get, and Trevor actually brought this up in last week's podcast, you're only ever going to get 6 points from him. So if you can find a cheaper keeper,
I would dispute that. I mean, De Gea is a great shot stopper. That's what he's famous for. And obviously this is a different team than the Van Gaal team from last year, but there were numerous game weeks last year which De Gea had 7 or 8 points and ended up with bonus points because of all the shots he stopped. So I wouldn't be too sure about that.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, he's certainly the top. He'll probably finish as the top overall point scorer for goalkeepers.
Yeah.
No doubt. No, I think, and it's especially because Jakubovic now, I mean, God, I can't believe he picked up a clean sheet in Game Week 2. I mean, that is a great, as long as you don't mind having 9.5 million in your back line, that is just a perfect pairing. De Gea at 5.5 and Jakubovic at 4 million.
Yeah.
If I wildcard, that's probably what my wildcard goalkeeping lineup is going to look like. Anybody else? I mean, I thought Arsenal played a lot. Their defense looked a lot better now that Koscielny's back.
Yeah, holding is an interesting one just because of his price tag. The hesitation with Arsenal's D is they're all 6.0. And at 4.5, getting in on those, they're sure to have a few clean sheets with this run of fixtures coming up.
Yeah, and the Mustafi thing, it still hasn't happened. I don't know why it hasn't happened, but one assumes it will at some point. So yeah, we'll see.
The other one, and it's recency bias, but there's a whole lot of logic to it. Is Gareth McAuley on West Brom? Dawson is basically his twin brother. Their wives get them confused from time to time. But McAuley is 4.5, where Dawson is 5.0. I mean, you could also go Jonas Olsen, who's 4.5. But McCauley's got the goal. He's always going to get like 2 or 3 goals off of set pieces during the course of a season. And West Brom looked good for a lot of clean sheets going forward.
Yeah. So I think they were agreed. Man U and Spurs being kind of the top two. And then I think it's kind of a drop off from there. Maybe City long term.
Right. All right, should we take a quick break, Josh, and then we can come back and just sort of get ourselves ready for game week 3 before we sign off?
Sure, let's do it. Same old podcast, always cheating. All right, Brandon, so that's about it for this week's episode. We just want to quickly look at the upcoming fixtures. They're all on Saturday and a normal week, Saturday and Sunday fixtures. That's because we're going to international break starting the next week. And it always comes a little too soon for me. I feel like I'm just getting into the season and suddenly you have this 2 week break.
I do love these Saturdays, though, where the midday round of fixtures has six games happening simultaneously. There's just no possible way to keep track of what all goals are. Hopefully goals will be flying in.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to get together for these fixtures, actually. It's going to be a first always cheating meetup of the year.
Yeah, if there are any New York cheaters out there, let us know. Let's meet up somewhere and watch these games. So, I mean, right off the bat, Spurs-Liverpool, we've got to be looking forward to that matchup. Liverpool will not want a repeat of their performance against Burnley.
Yeah.
It just looked absolutely diabolical. But there's another reason to have no qualms about getting rid of Firmino, because Spurs are home, and they're going to put up a pretty good fight here.
Definitely a little concerned about if I feel like I need to have Eden Hazard for that Chelsea-Burnley fixture, because I think they could really – they can really run riot in that fixture. The big question here is you've got the Hull Man United match, which is the late match on Saturday, and then you've got Man City West Ham the next day. And who's your captain, Brandon? Right now, if you had to pick right now, would you pick Aguero? Who's it on like right now? Like for your in case you get hit by a bus, who's on it right now?
Yeah, which very likely could happen. Now that I'm back from Scotland, I'm used to looking one way for the bus, and now I'm going to have to look the other way for the bus here in New York, and I'm liable to get flattened like a pancake. But yeah, right now it's on Aguero. I feel like there was a preview that we did preseason where I said Zlatan would be my captain. I mean, this had no data to compare it to, but I had Zlatan as my captain against Hull. But I really like Aguero against West Ham. What about you?
I'm on the fence. I'm leaning towards Zlatan, actually. Mm-hmm. But I think it could end up being kind of a neutral thing again, where they both God, I keep wanting to say bag goals. I don't know where this is coming
bang
from.
Bang them in. You're banging in those goals. What about Hazard, though? I mean, you're talking about Hazard.
I wouldn't not over these two guys. Yeah. Not given they're both playing teams that are pretty banged up.
This could be a good
going top of the league right now, so I don't want to disparage Hull too much.
If you are a Kane owner, though, this could be a good — this would go against what we were saying earlier about you just have to get Ibra and Aguero in. This could be a good week to sit on Harry Kane, because Liverpool's defense is just absolutely a cluster F.
Same way with Vardy. I mean, Vardy's home to Swansea. Yeah. There's probably some goals in that match for him too. So yeah, I mean, there are some differential options this week, but I won't be using them myself.
You got to think that Man U is like a lock for a clean sheet here against Hull, even though they're away.
I would definitely think so. Definitely a little worried about you. Well, I don't know, man. I'm pretty impressed with how that Hull — they are playing like a unit right now. I would not be surprised at all if they scored a goal in that match.
It's going to be Maloney all over the place.
All right, let's sign off here, Brandon.
Okay.
Thank you for listening. It's nice. I like these Sunday evening podcasts. It's a little feel a little more. I don't know. And I'm not shaking work off, in the middle of this thing.
All right, we have to remind everyone who's listening to get more Always Cheating podcasts. Subscribe on iTunes or on SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, anywhere you get your podcast. If you like what you hear, please give us a review on iTunes. That helps us. And also follow us online. Josh is tweeting up a storm, at Hail Cheaters. And you can also follow us on Facebook. We tend to do some different things on our Facebook page, like update people on how the Hail Cheaters Super League is going. And
the Showstoppers League.
Yeah, so there are Showstoppers. Great British Bake Off Head-to-Head League is being updated on Facebook. So check us out, facebook.com/alwayscheating. Anything else we need to cover, Josh?
Just Poku forever.
Oh, you can also join those leagues.
League codes are all over the place. You can barely go to one of our websites or Facebook or whatever without finding the league code. So please do join, though.
All right, guys. Poku forever.
Hail Cheaters and free Mopakani. Her water broke.
Oh, my. Well, let's just finish this podcast and then you can get going.
No, I was just kidding. It's she spilled a glass of water. I was just joking.
Yeah, obviously you were joking. I wouldn't demand that we finish an episode of the podcast after Kate's water.
That's true. I thought you were serious.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.